Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the Herald and Review dated January 20. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Locals Make Journey to Inauguration, Inauguration Trip Chance to Witness History for Local Residents. This is by Ryan Voiles, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Brent Hoadley and a few of his friends from his time in the Navy began to joke last year that if Donald Trump were elected, they would all meet up in Washington, D.C. to celebrate the occasion. But what started as a somewhat serious suggestion took on new meaning as Trump surprised the political world on election night. When Trump got elected that night, we all stayed up into the wee hours of the morning and said, "Do we really want to do this?" said Hoadley, a Forsyth resident. And they were like, "Heck yeah!" Hoadley is among a handful of local residents who will be making the trip to Washington to watch Trump be sworn in as the 45th President of the United States at noon today. Along with the wave of people coming to celebrate and protest the event, locals will also likely have to deal with rain throughout the early morning and afternoon, according to the National Weather Service. Hoadley originally planned on just watching the inauguration from the public space in the National Mall, but he learned a week ago that he had received tickets through the U.S. Representative Rodney Davis's office to get a closer view of Trump being sworn in. As someone who saw Trump when he stopped by Bloomington last year, Hoadley said he was excited for the chance to see the billionaire businessman become president. "It will be history. We have a guy who has never served in public office," Hoadley said. "No one or any special interests is controlling him." Hoadley said he will be leaving from his home in Forsyth to pick up a friend flying into St. Louis from Arizona. From there, the duo planned to drive to the East Coast and meet up with another friend flying in from New York City, just a bit south of Washington. Though he's concerned about potential conflicts with protesters, Hoadley said that overall he's excited to take in the event and the rich history of the United States. Another first-timer to Washington is hoping to use this weekend as a chance to take in the sights and sounds. Shane Bouvet, a 24-year-old from Stonington, will be making the trip not only to experience the inauguration, but to appear at an inauguration gala later that night. Not bad for a self-described small-town blue-collar guy who works as a FedEx courier. "I'm just really glad to be there," he said. "I'm just a guy who did social media and turned out successful." Bouvet operated the Facebook pages Illinois for Trump, and as the Illinois team leader, Team Trump Grassroots, the latter a page with more than 148,000 likes as of inauguration week. Through his campaign work, Bouvet received invitations to attend several inaugural events as a thanks for his service. Even when talking about the opportunity, Bouvet can't hide his excitement and emphasized several times just how overwhelming has been support over the past month. "I simply love America, and it's so incredible to see the amount of support that has come in since the election," he said. Before the recent election, Bouvet has been active in campaigns in Wisconsin and Illinois and even circulated petitions to run for state representative in the 96th district in 2015 before withdrawing. This Friday's inauguration will mark a return to Washington for Chaplain Steve Holden. Holden and his son Matt will be making their second visit to an inauguration. Having previously gone to the George W. Bush inauguration in 2005, the trip allows the Holdens to soak in the history of the occasion, as well as for Steve Holden to renew some friendships with those he knows through his work with the National Chaplain Program, United States Emergency Chaplain Corps, and the chaplains for the Illinois State Police. Politics has always been of interest to Holden. As he stands and watches the event, he will be thinking of how many like him have made the same pilgrimage to the nation's capital over the past two centuries. To stand out there on the Capitol lawn and to think that people have been standing on that very spot for some 200 years in support of their government, he said, just to be part of that, it's something special. As Central Illinois residents make the trip to Washington, another one will do her best to help welcome them to the nation's capital. Angela Osborne, a Decatur native and 2009 graduate of Millikan University, will be part of the host committee for the inaugural Heartland Ball, a partnership between several Midwestern states to help celebrate the inauguration. Despite heated political discourse, Osborne hopes the nonpartisan ball can act as a welcome respite for people and introduce them to wonderful opportunities that are occurring across the Midwest. Osborne, who also serves as a board member of the Illinois State Society, said her new residence in Washington, D.C. will not prevent her from bringing a bit of home to the ball. Specifically, when attendees enter the university room of the gala, where the flag of Millikan University will be alongside other schools' flags, I can't think of a better way to give back to the Decatur community than to bring members of Congress, high-profile Illinoisans, and people from across the country together to celebrate Illinois. Our next article is headlined, Lawmaker, Office Holder, Pensions May Fade Away, by Debbie Hernandez, H&R Springfield Bureau Writer. Springfield. Illinois House and Senate members have proposed legislation in recent years that would eliminate new members' eligibility for the General Assembly's retirement system, but no law has been enacted thus far. However, a growing number of lawmakers are opting out of the system on their own. As of this week, 52 of the General Assembly's 177 current members have opted out of the pension plan. Meanwhile, each chamber will consider proposals in the new session to end pension benefits for future legislators. A House bill would prohibit the retirement system from accepting future lawmakers beginning January 1. As part of its grand bargain budget package, the Senate proposes an overarching pension reform plan, including restricting the General Assembly plan from accepting any new participants after the legislation is enacted. Under the state law, state constitutional officers, the House clerk and assistant clerk, and the Senate secretary and assistant secretary are also eligible to participate after serving 10 years. However, future officials in these positions would not be eligible under the Senate's proposal. John Patterson, spokesman for Senate President John Cullerton, Democrat of Chicago, said the legislation is only focused on future members because of a 2015 Illinois Supreme Court decision on pensions. We are trying to put together an effort in the Senate to recognize where we think there is some common ground, both among the members and in the decision that the courts have made, to see if we can put together some savings, Patterson said. The Supreme Court ruled in May 2015 that according to the Illinois Constitution, pension benefits for current members cannot be diminished or impaired. Lawmakers had attempted to reduce pension benefits in an effort to minimize the state's high pension debt. State Representative Tim Butler, Republican of Springfield, is a co-sponsor on the current House proposal and co-sponsored a previous version. Butler, who opted out of the retirement plan after being appointed to his seat in 2015, said he does not believe legislators should receive a pension. It's a lucrative pension. I don't see where people in the General Assembly really should get a pension for the work they're going to do on behalf of the people, Butler said. Members haven't really felt the need to eliminate it because they're benefiting from it, frankly. I don't hold that against any member. Of the 17 newly elected lawmakers this year, 12 have opted out, while 5 have yet to decide whether to accept legislative pensions. New lawmakers have up to 2 years to decide whether to participate. The number of lawmakers choosing to opt out drastically increased from 7 members in fiscal year 2012 to 23 members in fiscal 2013. Since then, numbers have steadily increased. State Senator Andy Menar, Democrat of Bunker Hill, opted out of the retirement system after being elected in 2012. Menar said he decided to opt out to remain consistent with his decision to not participate in the retirement system in his previous positions as mayor of Bunker Hill and chairman of the Macoupin County Board. Menar says he supports the Senate's proposed pension reform legislation. He was also a co-sponsor of an unsuccessful bill in the last General Assembly that would have prohibited new senators from participating. Butler says he hopes legislation to eliminate pensions for lawmakers will be considered in the new session, but a new law is more likely to be enacted in future General Assemblies. I've become more encouraged because I think every year we have more members opt out, he said. It's certainly something that is on the radar. State Representative McSweeney, Republican of Barrington Hills, introduced another House bill this week that would prohibit new legislators elected or appointed after November 6, 2018, from participating in the retirement system. Our next article is headlined, Special Prosecutor to Investigate J. Scott Misconduct Allegations, by Ryan Voiles, H&R staff writer. Decatur. A special prosecutor will be appointed to investigate allegations of official misconduct by Macon County State's Attorney J. Scott. Judge Carl Koretz ruled Thursday afternoon that the investigation will move forward with a prosecutor to be appointed from the Illinois Attorney General's office. The identity of the special prosecutor will be announced at a later date. Attorney John Davis, who along with Greg Mattingly filed the original petition for a special prosecutor, said he was pleased that the judge saw fit to move forward with the case. We're just passing it up for an investigation to determine if Mr. Scott has violated the official misconduct clause, Davis said. That's all we're asking for, and that's what we got. Scott, who has repeatedly denied the allegations, said Thursday evening that he will fully cooperate with the special prosecutor. We have nothing to hide, he said. There's been no criminal misconduct on my part. I look forward to putting this ugly incident behind me. The allegations became a central issue in Scott's heated re-election campaign against Republican Dan Hassinger. Scott, who defeated Hassinger with 51.1% of the vote in the November election, has said that he believed the allegations were politically motivated. The petition was filed September 13 by Davis and Mattingly, the latter a member of the Macon County Board and former chairman of its Justice Committee. It alleges that Scott allowed employees to engage in electioneering within county offices, used his county-owned smartphone for political and personal use, solicited an employee of the Macon County Sheriff's Office to support his campaign in community parades, and exhibited pornographic material to a female state's attorney employee and female crime victim on a computer owned by the county. In December, the 3-member County Ethics Commission ruled against 2 women who alleged misconduct was occurring in the office under Scott. The commission said employees of the office cannot violate the county ethics ordinance because those workers are not employed by the county. The commission agreed with the Illinois Supreme Court and Illinois statute that the office holder and employees of the state's attorney and circuit clerk are state officers who serve the state, which helps fund their salary. Headline, Trump Direct Aims to Make Printing Great Again by Tony Reed, H&R staff writer. Decatur. Donald Trump took a very direct path to the White House, and Trump Direct is enjoying a nice little publicity ride on the 45th president's coattails. Enjoying it most of the time, anyway. The Decatur printing firm, founded 37 years ago by Dennis Trump, no relation, inevitably finds its name associated with the Donald. I did have one lady call one day, and she is like, "I just want to know if you're related to Donald Trump," said Krista Trump, graphic designer wife of Dennis Trump and the company's co-owner with him. I said, "No," and she said, "Well, that's good," and then she started going off on him. And I was starting to get a little offended because, well, my name is Trump, too. Both Dennis and Krista Trump voted for their namesake, impressed by his pro-business philosophy. "I'm not a total fan, but we needed change," added Krista Trump. "I just hope he can keep a lid on some of his behavior and his mouth." Both Decatur Trumps were rather surprised by the insurgent Republican candidate's upset victory, but they hadn't lost any time tapping into the Trump publicity machine. As candidate Trump was storming his way across the nation, Dennis Trump had sidewalk billboard signs made with messages like, "Always a win when you vote Trump Direct." The couple didn't have a licensing agreement with the Trump Organization, which is a pity. They specialize in direct mail, and the Trump political machine spent $29 million on that form of advertising. And the Trumps say they were getting calls almost every week from potential customers hoping they were the source for Trump campaign signs. Dennis Trump said he had first got the idea of playing the name association game back in the 1980s when Donald Trump was famous for lavish spending on yachts, airlines, and casinos. "I used my daughter Lisa in a radio ad with me when she was a tiny girl, and she would say, 'Dad, I hear we're famous,' playing off the whole Trump thing." Lisa Trump was about 5 then and is 35 now. A PhD genome scientist with published research to her credit. She's getting married soon and apparently not a Trump fan, has floated the idea to her parents that this might be the time to change her last name, which published researchers don't usually like to do. "We don't know if she was joking," said her father. "Maybe she'll just hyphenate it," said her mother. Headline: No Tears in Decatur for Blagojevich's Lack of Pardon by Valerie Wells, H&R staff writer. Decatur. In a state with a reputation for corruption, having a former governor in prison isn't unusual. However, with President Barack Obama having pardoned so many people or commuted their sentences during his last week in office, one person was noticeably absent from his list: Rod Blagojevich. "Rod Blagojevich did a lot of things he needs to be in there for, so I think it's about right," said Adam Acree, a culinary arts student at Richland Community College. "Illinois is known for being the most corrupt state in the nation," said Laura Benton, who is studying to be a psychologist. "I think we might have gotten demoted to second. That'd be nice." Benton said she doesn't particularly care if Blagojevich was left off the list in light of Illinois' record for former governors going to prison, but there are probably other reasons for Obama's decision. "Wasn't the main reason Blagojevich was convicted is he was trying to sell Obama's Senate seat," she said. "For Obama to pardon him, it's kind of like seems a bit, it would seem suspicious and probably wouldn't go over well." Blagojevich is in the fourth year of a 14-year term. He is serving at a federal prison in Colorado. A presidential commutation or pardon was one of his last chances to be released from prison. Blagojevich last year submitted a request to have his sentence on wide-ranging corruption convictions commuted. In federal cases, only presidents have the power to reduce a sentence. Obama's decision means President-elect Donald Trump could be left to decide the fate of Blagojevich, who appeared on Trump's Celebrity Apprentice TV show in 2010. Acri approved of the 330 pardons announced Thursday for nonviolent drug offenses. With marijuana becoming legal in several states, he said, and the fact that drug offenses are often due to addiction, those pardons are the right thing to do. A lot of those people need help rather than be thrown in jail, Acri said. Trey Verculin agreed. By pardoning the drug offenses, it gives them a chance to shape up, he said. It gives them the chance to think about what they should do to not make those kinds of decisions. Headline, Leadership Development Raised to Next Level, by Chris Lusvardi, H&R staff writer, Decatur. Lyle Campbell and Son Realtors is going through a transformation as a business. At the same time, brokers Bruce Campbell and his daughter Lisa Campbell are considering how best to be effective leaders, not just in the business, but throughout the community. They want the business to provide a unique approach to the real estate market, Lisa Campbell said. They were among those interested Thursday in learning about the Leadership Master's Program being offered through the Greater Decatur Chamber of Commerce. We're launching a new business model for our company, Lisa Campbell said. This will go hand in hand. Bruce Campbell said he continues to learn while trying to be proactive in thinking about the company, along with serving on the Richland Community College Board of Trustees. The Chamber will be offering the Leadership Masters for the second time, Program Director Mark Sturgell said. Most companies don't spend a great deal to invest in their people, Sturgell said. This is an investment in those people. The program, which was offered for the first time last year, will provide a 10-week coaching process with meetings starting March 2 and going through May 18. The early bird registration deadline is February 2, with a final deadline of February 16. Participants can from any stage of their career. Although Sturgell said, those interested in information usually tend to be mid-career. Sturgell challenges participants to think differently and embrace change as an ally. Attitudes or ways of thinking can be changed. We're conditioned to take shortcuts, Sturgell said. Everybody can develop some leadership qualities. They tend to come out more refocused on the things truly important to them than they ever have been. Sturgell said, by developing effective leaders, others will choose to follow while producing desired results in support of an organization's mission. In turn, he said it can be part of an effort for companies to retain quality employees. In addition to group sessions, Sturgell said individual coaching will be offered throughout the program. For more information, go to www.decaturchamber.com. or email mark.sturgell, S-T-U-R-G-E-L-L, at decaturchamber.com or call 217-422-2200. Local briefs for Friday, January 20. Lincoln, Logan County Relay. The American Cancer Society's Relay for Life of Logan County will open its 2017 campaign with a kickoff potluck and meeting at 6 p.m. Monday, January 23, in Lincoln Christian Church, 204 North McLean Street, Lincoln. The public and past committee members are invited. For more information, call Sarah Butrell at 217-737-6423 or Tonita Reifsteck at 217-732-9796. Monticello, soil and water tests. The Piatt County Soil and Water Conservation District is teaming with the Farm Bureau to provide workshops featuring testing services. Both soil and water samples can be tested to determine levels of available nitrates within the samples. It is part of an effort to help landowners voluntarily reduce nitrates. A soil probe will be available if samples are collected at least 1 week prior to the workshop. The workshops will be held the first Wednesday of each month from February through July, starting with 1, 8 a.m. to 3:30 p.m., Wednesday, February 1, in the USDA office, 1201 Bear Lane, Monticello. Results will remain confidential. For more information, go to www.PiatteCountySWCD.com or call 217-762-2571, extension 3. From the opinion page, a letter to the editor. ALDE vote a decider on mayoral choice. While most Decatur may have forgotten about ALDE's request for a new store on the corner of Ash and Main, those of us who have homes here have not forgotten. As the election for Decatur mayor nears, I, for one, will not forget how we had to fight to prevent further development on this corner, and most importantly, how we were treated by the current mayor. Julie Moore Wolf said that it would be irresponsible of her to vote against the ALDE proposal because of the financial issues of the city. How about voting against the proposal to save a well-established neighborhood, one of the very few left in Decatur? How about voting against the proposal because you are actually listening to the citizens that you are here to serve? She also stated that this particular corner will be sought after for development in the future. Since the night the vote was rejected, has anyone in the city suggested alternative sites to ALDE? We have many parcels of land and have added many more with the closing of several stores that would make perfect sites for a new ALDE. What has the city or mayor done to interest ALDE in any of these alternative sites? I urge my fellow citizens to keep this in mind on April 4 when we go to the polls. The city may not be showing other options to ALDE, but we voters will have another option on April 4. Susan Easton. We will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review, dated January 20. Please stay tuned.